Okay, I'm Jody Reisner. I work for USDA NRCS in Columbia, Missouri as a conservation agronomist, and I am also a graduate student at the University of Missouri. Of all the soil health definitions that I've been studying over the last year or so, there's many that came out in the 90s. Actually, there was a paper from Warkentin in 1977, and that kind of progressed and so forth in the 1990s. And what we're seeing with soil health today, it was soil quality. But this definition kind of strikes me, and it strikes me because it includes healthy soil, healthy plants, healthy animals, and healthy people. And as we do that, then we can have a healthy environment. So that is why this definition struck me. And I kind of take this to heart, actually, personally. So the healthy soil on the, that'd be your left, okay. On the left is, in all these pictures in my presentation were taken from me, except for one you see with the goat and the dog. That is from my good friend, Carrie Clark. She is a researcher at Bradford Research Center in Columbia. But the soil on the left was taken at Terry Taylor's farm. And this farmer has been doing no-till and cover crops for probably a decade. Actually, cover crops I think he's been doing for 8 years, but no-till for longer. So he has really seen a change in his soil. And then the next photo there is a picture of our garden. We grow a lot of our own food. We moved from Missouri, but we were on a farm for 20 years, so healthy food is very important to our family. So we have garlic and potatoes and tomatoes there, and then healthy animals, and then healthy people. And that's myself and my three daughters. So on to the study. This was a study located in Fairfield County, Ohio. And this sampling was a one-time sampling in the fall of 2013. They do have plenty of precipitation, and this is a temperate a climate where they do have the four seasons. The soils information, this was in the Corn Belt region in the MLRA 111B. So this is the Corn Belt region, and these soils were typical of this region here in Ohio, which were silt loams, and then the one on the foot slope position was actually a silty clay loam. And these are mollisols and alphasols, and there is a lot of these soils that we studied were either somewhat poorly drained or poorly drained. So we collected samples in November of 2013, and the soil depth you can see here, we took 164 samples, and we used the Humboldt rings, the silver Humboldt rings, so that we could get bulk density. And then we looked at three landscape positions, summit, back slope, and foot slope. And then there were three cropping management systems, and then we conducted testing on the chemical, physical, and biological. And here it shows what did these fields look at time of sampling, because with soil health, I think the time of sampling is crucial, and what vegetation is there at the time of sampling. So I really think we need to understand what did things look like when we sampled. So on the transitional field, there was a heavy mix of cover crops here, which included oats and peas and hairy vetch and daikon radish and cereal rye and oats. On the conventional field, that was a field that he has not rented. The transitional, he has been renting. The conventional was just a neighbor, and at that time, it was heavy corn residue. And then on the progressive field, which she has been, this is the home farm. You can barely see it, but there's a little bit of cereal rye growing here. So on the conventional again, that's his, that is the farm, the neighbor's farm. There was no cover crops. And that field has never had cover crops. And the tillage includes your typical disking, field cultivating, residue left on the soil surface after harvest. And this is a corn-soybean rotation on the conventional. On the transitional, he started renting that in 2009, and he converted that to a no-till system then, and then he started the corn, soybeans, and wheat. And then this farmer really looks to put wheat in the rotation, maybe not for his economics, but really to put in that diverse mix of cover crops to be able to build that soil organic matter. So that is this farmer's goal. Remember, each farmer will have a goal for their own farm of why they're doing soil health and why they're doing the specific management practices. On the progressive system, this was no-till system for 40 years. He started cover crops here in 2009, which really, if you think about it, that's only 4 years since from the time that I sampled that he has been doing cover crops. And at that time, in 2009, until 2012, he was only doing that single species. And it wasn't until 2012 where he started doing a diverse mix of cover crops. And this one, of course, was now he has corn, soybeans, and wheat. And there's the three landscape positions. So I'm just going to look at a couple of the attributes, but for soil organic carbon, there really, when I did the ANOVA on these, there was not statistically significant differences, but in that progressive system, there was a lot of variation in that progressive system, but that one had the highest values, and of course that makes sense because he's been no-tilling for 40 years compared to the conventional. And also that transitional too, that was starting to store that carbon. Some of these other things like the biological component, we looked at several, but I'm just going to give you a few today. But for the fungi, the total fungi, the transitional field is the one that had the highest amount. And that makes sense to me because if you look at that field, that picture I showed you at time of sampling with the great amount of biomass and the cover crops there, so that had the greatest amount of total fungi. And then the progressive, the conventional, this is where it's a little trying to figure this out. Why did the conventional then have the next highest? So this isn't always easy to pick apart, but like I said, a lot of it has to do with time of sampling and history of management. For the wet aggregate stability, the physical, the progressive of no-till for 40 years, that was statistically a significant difference between that and the conventional. And the transitional then was the next one, and that was also significantly different from the conventional. So for the active carbon, looking at that one, the progressive one, which is his home farm where you saw that small, the small cereal rye growing, that was significantly different, again, from the conventional. And then the next one was a transitional where you saw that cover crops growing. So these are some of the samples that I was a little surprised at. There was no significant differences, and that includes bulk density, total PLFA, that's phospholipid fatty acid testing that we did, and I told you that soil organic carbon. So I was surprised that there wasn't any significant differences included in that. And there, I did not find any significant differences in any of the landscape positions. So then how would I communicate this to the farmer? Okay, the farmer is getting these tests, so then as a conservationist, how do I communicate this? Because this is the step that is very important if we want to see implementation. So I would just talk to them like those diverse covers after wheat seem to be really making a difference for you with your soil biology in terms of number and diversity. So putting wheat in his rotation, he was a corn and soybean, straight corn and soybean farmer. And it was his decision to add wheat to the rotation, and it does seem to be helping in the biological component for him. And the other thing, I know this farmer has interseeding equipment, so using that interseeding equipment to get those covers in early. As you saw in that progressive system, that cereal rye in November was very small. You could hardly see it. Well, that translates into having less biomass growing in the spring because after traveling a little bit in the Midwest, getting that cover crop in early makes a difference for how things look in the spring. And then consistently using cover crops. And be honest with you, for farmers, that is not always an easy feat. Even though they want to, they desire to get these cover crops in, it can be a challenge. And I'll give you an example. This fall was a good example of that because we had 6 weeks in Missouri without rain. So when I was in the Boot Hill in the Delta area working with farmers on soil health, they were so glad that they got rain, but a lot of them aerial fly on their cover crops, so they spent the money already to get those cover crops in, and they did not see any active growth of their cover crop for 6 weeks, which can be discouraging to them. So they were glad when they got that rain. So timing is an issue for them, and then again, climate has to cooperate with that. And also for this farmer does have a chance to integrate livestock, if possible, into some of his well-drained fields. So I would talk to him about that, because that the one by the home farm there, he would be able to do that. And I know this farmer is thinking about that. So my study was to capture soil health data, looking at a snapshot in time. Once again, this is a master's for me. This is maybe not what I would do for a PhD, but this is how it turned out for me this time. There was much variation in the data per system. There was a lot of variation. So the differences in the system, these need to be evaluated over time. And as I went and listened to the talks, and as I've been looking at papers, we need more long-term studies on these issues of cover crops and soil health. These three-year studies that, mine was only a snapshot in time, but even some of these three-year studies, I don't think are showing enough differences that I think are capable of these soil health management practices. So I'm advocating some long-term studies and hope to have some with my collaborators in Missouri. The use of diverse cover crops were not consistently used. So remember, sometimes a farmer, when they get out their corn and soybeans late, they are only going to plant that cereal rye. So that makes a difference on how much soil health you can try to gain if you're just doing that. But I would also have to say that some cover crop is better than none. And like I said, additional sampling in subsequent years may detect more differences. So I'm going on to this slide because working with farmers like I do, it's a systems approach. Each farmer is different. Each farmer has to figure out what different managements they want to do with their own soil properties that the farmer has on their land. So they can't change their soil, they can't change the inherent properties of their soils. They can have effect on the dynamic properties, but they have to work with what they have for their soils. And then different crops, what decisions do they have to make with that? Like this farmer, he decided to put in wheat so he could get that diverse mix of cover crops in. The soil biology, that is something that most farmers that I work with, there's a few things they're looking at. I'll get onto that next slide, but they do want to see their soil biology increased and diversified. And then the environment also where they are. So a lot of what's going on in their system has to do with the climate. And I want to go on to this slide because this is still an issue. This is still an issue that we need to address. These were pictures that were taken in Missouri by myself and one other colleague in 20, 2013 and actually in 2010. So there is still an excessive amount of erosion going on. And this is a place on the left here that the terraces that were installed, so this farmer installed terraces, spent thousands of dollars to install terraces. The terraces over top, and all that topsoil ended up in the road ditch. Okay, and of course, what's in that topsoil? All the great things that the farmer needs to grow those, you know, to grow the crops that they want, to get the yields that they want. The biology, the organic matter, and what else? Of course, the chemicals and all the other things that they put on and spent their own money on. And then on the bottom then, this is the county staff that comes out and cleans out these ditches full of that topsoil. So I'm hoping to be able to educate and work with farmers enough and staff enough to see if we can really get this erosion situation taken care of. Because if you do not stabilize the soil surface, it's going to be very hard to build soil health. And then once again on the right, look at how those corn, I mean, how many inches, I did not go out and measure this, but how many inches do you think are there that is lost in probably one or two rainstorms? One or two. And then, of course, on the bottom right, this is that same field. And where does it all end up? Right at the tile inlet, okay? Right at the underground outlet inlet. All right, so that's my speak on soil erosion. So what will we do with our science? That's what I'm here to challenge all of you with. A lot of you are scientists. What do we do with our science? And of course, I'm an applied scientist, so I don't want to see it sitting just on the shelf, as you see on the left, just left in a book. I want to be able to work with all of you scientists and collaborate with you and come up with solutions and assessments and training so that we can get the information out to the farmer. So this farmer, a little bit of a story about him, he is another farmer in Missouri that I work with. He's been doing no-till for a while, just started cover crops. I think about two years ago, he grows cereal rye and hairy vetch. He actually grows his own seed. He grows his own cereal rye seed and his hairy vetch seed. He has diversified his rotation by adding sunflowers and a proso millet, so he's selling that. So actually, economically, I also work with an ag economist, and this is really working out economically for this farmer. So that's another farmer. So communicate your science, and even if you can get your science to people like me who work with the farmer, we are thrilled to be able to do that with you. And here's another farmer on the left, great farmer. He's so excited. Carrie and I went around the state and Kristen, and we gave soil health talks. And this is one of the farmers who then contacted me after those talks, and now I work with him on soil health. And he is so thrilled to see his soils covered with cover crops. And he did go to 98-day corn so he can get his cover crops in. And he also plants a great mix of cover crops and fenced off over 900 acres. So after that 98-day corn has his cover crops, the beginning of November, he's grazing these cover crops for 2 or 3 months, and then again grazing them in the spring. And he's really making money growing meat. So that's another way these farmers are coming up with their innovative ways on their own farms to make this work for them. And I talked to Glenn the other day. I said, can you do a trial study with me with cover crops and no cover crops? And he actually hesitated. And it's like, I don't know if I want to do no cover crops. So he is so committed to this that I don't think he wants to do a study where he can't plant cover crops. So that's just a story of how he has caught a vision. And the last time I visited him, his nephew came, and I talked to that nephew for a few minutes. And that nephew, and this may sound funny to some of you, that nephew did not let any of his family know that I was talking to him about soil health. And it was a big deal to him that that this kind of had to almost like be in secret for him, because his whole family does, you know, doesn't think much about all this cover crops and soil health. So it's really interesting how you meet these farming families, and how Glenn was so, you know, adamant that I talked to this nephew. It's very interesting. So I'll end my presentation as Norman Borlaug would say, bring it to the farmer. Questions? All right. So will you please stick around for the business meeting? Did you have a question, ma'am?
I do have a question. What is the farmer's attitude on recycling nitrogen in their system?
They want to see more recycling of nitrogen, but they're very standoffish on reducing nitrogen rates at this time. They don't feel that is something they want to take the risk at doing.
Okay.